racing to the first tee, knowing what fun it will be. Soon the starter will call me to the first tee.
My, oh my, summer is here. Charles Schwab Challenge, well, that's over with. Women's Golf Day is on the horizon, and this week it's the Memorial Tournament presented by Nationwide, obviously with Jack Nicklaus as the host. Hi, I'm Bob Bupka. So very proud to be here with Jay Randolph Jr., Jay, often known as STL Golf Geek on Twitter. Jay, I have to say this, the new schedule is clicking through so quickly that it's really hard to keep up.
Yeah, it is. And I don't know how I feel yet. I really didn't watch any of the Charles Schwab Challenge till Sunday. And watched a lot of it. And watched a clinic by Kevin Na. But you're right, Bob. We're on the heels of the Nationwide, the Memorial presented by Nationwide. You got a strong field here. And then, you know, before we know it, we're going to be at Pebble Beach, and before you know it, you're going to be in Northern Ireland at Port Rush. I mean, it's, you know, when you take August out of the mix and now the playoffs no longer run into the first couple of weeks of September, you know, this bad boy ends pretty quick.
Yeah, you're right about that, Jay. And, things happen at a, rapid pace before you even get into, what a great win it was for Kevin Na. Somewhat on a personal note, but this week at the Austin Country Club where they play the Dell Technologies Match Play Championship, they're going to pay tribute to Tinsley Pinnick, the son of Harvey Pinnick, Sonny Rhodes, author Sonny Rhodes, as he's known, had the honor and distinction of being not only the pallbearer for Harvey Pinnick, he was the pallbearer for Tinsley Pinnick, and he's been asked to speak this Thursday. We wish him a lot of luck, and we were just talking, and it's 100 years that the Pinnicks have been involved with that one club, Austin Country Club. 100 years, Jay. One family.
Yeah, they've only had three pros.
I know.
I mean, it's really unbelievable, and I know you and Janice created a tremendous relationship with the Pinnick family and have a passion for Austin. I mean, it's phenomenal. You know, we're losing some of that breed. I think of our man, the little pro at Bel Air, you know, Eddie Marin, such a grand fellow who we've had on the show before, Bob Ford. I mean, there are a handful of these pros that, you know, now things are a little bit different in the PGA of America. And, you know, it's sad to say so long to some of these folks because they had such an impact, Bob, over such a long period of time and over so many people.
Well, you're right, Jay. And I refer to those as pros.
Yep.
And you know, nowadays, obviously, it's more of a business than it is a passion. But for the hardworking PGA members, 29,000 of them, they certainly deserve a lot of credit, the long hours they put on the range to help people improve their golf game so that they can increase their enjoyment. Somebody that certainly increased his enjoyment last week, Kevin Na, quite a story. You know, he came over here when he was 8 years old. Can you imagine he finishes his junior year at high school and says, that's it, no more school, I'm going to be a professional golfer. I mean, when I say that, I find it hard to believe, but that's actually what happened.
Well, and you and I have seen a couple of people try it, Ty Tryon being one, and in most cases it doesn't work out. And I like to refer to Kevin Na as a riddle wrapped inside of an enigma because, you know, I mean, he has amassed $31 million in tour earnings, but this was just his third victory. The guy has had a lot of highs and lows. He's fought through it. He's had problems where he had trouble taking the club back. He made the highest score ever on a par four. You know, he's been the source of some controversy and some consternation, But damn if he didn't play a brilliant round on Sunday, and they patted him on the back and he got his third trophy. Really impressed with the way he was locked in on that back nine on a golf course where if you start getting it a little wayward, it can jump up and bite you. He held through strong and really, you know, put a big cap on this W. He played brilliant really all 4 days.
No, he really did. And if you want to know a little bit about Kevin Na, the human being, you have to consider this. His caddy is a fellow by the name of Kenny Harms. Kenny is often regarded as one of the best caddies on the PGA Tour. He's been with Kevin Na 11 years. I mean, you don't stay with a player when you're a top-ranked caddy unless there's a genuine relationship there. And it came out this week that Kenny might be the highest-paid caddy as far as percentage-wise. Kevin Na is very generous. You saw that this week. Part of winning the Colonial, he gets a 1973 tricked out Dodge Challenger to tie in with the Charles Schwab Challenge. And as soon, a couple of seconds after the winning putt, he tells Kenny, well, that's your car. He just gives it to him. I mean, that Kevin Na has a heart of gold, and you touched upon it. Can you imagine being a professional golfer and you stand on the tee like he did at the Players' Championship several years back and could not pull the club back? I mean, that was painful to watch.
I mean, he let's be honest, Bob. I mean, he was a heartbeat away from, man, I got to shut it down. I mean, it was that bad. I mean, when you get to where you can't pull the trigger back and don't know what you're doing and have a complete mental block, it's tough. And I'm sure that's tough on Kenny Harms. I mean, you know, he's been with some big-time sticks. And you, more than anybody, I got to see a little of it, but you've got a great history and knowledge of caddy-player relationships because you've created some great relationships with caddies that has allowed you to have insight inside the ropes and get a feeling for these guys and these relationships. And I think you bring up an excellent point that it is somewhat hard to believe that along the trials and tribulations of those 11 years that somebody didn't come along and say, Kenny, you want me to get you off this bag and, you know, get you a little bit more consistency or a guy that can swing the club. You know, that's what makes it even more special. And I think you could tell that, and we'll probably hear that in a little bit, how happy Kevin was.
Yeah, absolutely. Matter of fact, good timing there, Jay. Why don't we give a listen to what Kevin Na had to say regarding that victory.
This tournament has so many world-class legends of the game that's on the wall. And on the first tee, I saw that wall, looked at the name right below Justin Rose, and in my head, I engraved my name in it, in my head. And I'm just trying to visualize success before I teed off.
That's pretty strong stuff. When you can stand on the tee, look at the wall of champions, which you and I have done in person many times, and engrave your name in the spot allocated for the 2019 champion. Pretty good strategy, I would think, by Kevin.
After the tournament, Bob, he said that, you know, over the years, he loved Colonial. He loved the venue. He loved Fort Worth. He saw himself being a multiple champion. And to get this one, you know, he said, hey, I still got some more shots. Maybe I was right with my vision. But clearly, something in Fort Worth is right for Kevin Na. I mentioned he'd finished second there before, loves it, and had a premonition that he was going to win a couple of these things. Well, he got his first.
Yeah, you know, it really is a golf course that suits his game, Jay. He's not one of the long hitters on tour. He doesn't carry it 300 yards, which is almost the standard by which players are rated right now. But he is a shot maker. They call it Hogan's Alley. You know, Ben Hogan certainly was a shot maker. And, well, yeah. Forget me talking about Colonial. Here's what Kevin Na had to say about that Colonial course.
It's a great design golf course. You got to hit a lot of draws off the tee, but mostly I think a lot of my draws work out here. I feel like it's a second shot in golf course. Everyone kind of puts it in the same positions themselves off the tee in the same spot, and It's about how good you can hit it up with the irons and how well you can putt. And I'm a pretty good player fairway in.
Well, he's certainly not modest, but, you know, you got to have a little confidence, and certainly Kevin Na has that. What about Tony Finau? He seems to be, he's going to be a millionaire finishing second.
Yeah, you know, you got to remember, the guy's only won one time, and this is no slight on the Puerto Rico Open, but that's not the Memorial, and that's not even Colonial. I'm not taking anything away from T. Finau. I mean, clearly, he is a world-class player. He's proved it. He's finished in the top 10 in every major championship. Let's remember that. Since 2015, when he finished tied for 10th at the PGA, he's been tied for 9th in an Open, tied for 5th at a U.S. Open, and tied for 5th this year at the Masters. So good indications, and a guy to keep your eye on, Bob, as we move toward the third major of the year, the U.S. Open. I'd just like to see him hoist some more trophies.
Well, he certainly hits it far enough. He seems very cool, calm, and collected out there. Maybe a big win will, you know, open up those floodgates, and he can win on a consistent basis. Another game that, for me, Jay, and I need your help on this one, evaluating the play of Jordan Spieth. You know, the first couple of days, he made a ton of putts, making, you know, 25, 30-foot putts. But, you know, when you're making those kind of putts and you finish, you know, tie for eighth, I'm saying to myself, am I watching somebody coming out of a slump, or am I watching somebody that, you know, just had an exceptional putting week, but still not enough to get his nose over the line?
If you look at the statistics, as Bob mentioned, from the first 3 days, the guy made miles, and I mean miles of putts. That didn't happen on Sunday when he shot a couple over. He'd gotten himself in position. Now, I'm not saying he'd have caught Nah, but you never know when a guy like Jordan Spieth gets rolling, makes a couple of birdies, how it's going to react, how the rest of the field's going to react. I don't know, Bob. It's one of those fascinating things to watch. Is this the start of something good, and we just need to get to a final round where he plays well, or is this becoming a trend where he seems to play well early in the week and then not be able to finish it off? I don't know. It's very interesting. We're approaching, really, the year anniversary of when things started going bad for him at the Open Championship. I believe he's playing this week, and then we'll play at the U.S. Open. Clearly, he's doing a lot of things right, but, you know, things changed on Sunday with the putter, that's for sure.
Well, you use the words, I don't know. And I think those can be applied to Molinari. You know, did something happen at the Masters when he was in complete control, going to the 12th hole on Sunday and then rinses his golf ball? It seems like he really hasn't done much since then.
Well, you know, he didn't do much at the PGA. I think for a guy like Molinari, once he gets a victory, and this is not to take away from the Colonial or any other event, but it seems like we've, you know, the majors were always heightened anyway, but it seems like with the newer condensed schedule, they're even heightened more, which is somewhat scary. So my judgment on Molinari will probably come after Pebble, but it is not a good trend. He did make the cut, but finished tied for 53rd at 4 over par. We'll see how he progresses as we get closer to the United States Open.
Well, help me out on this one, Jay. The play of Bryson DeChambeau. I mean, in the grill room with Bob and Jay, we were extolling the virtues of Bryson DeChambeau. It seemed like the world was his oyster, as they say. And suddenly, he's not playing well. He misses the cut on Colonial, and going into the week, I kind of had Bryson DeChambeau in my mind because he's a tactician.
Yep.
He's a shot maker. I said, wow, this could be a golf course that he could do something really well. He misses the cut. Ricky Fowler also misses the cut.
Yeah, I'm not real worried about Ricky. I think, you know, I mean, these guys have got to be hitting a little bit of a wall. I mean, a little bit. I mean, I know they're not getting tackled out there or checked into a board like a hockey player, but, I mean, it is taxing on them and travel and that type of thing. DeChambeau, you know, when you go to the beat of your own drummer, there's going to be things where that don't make much sense. But, you know, I don't know that it would surprise either one of us if he was on the leaderboard at the U.S. Open. I mean, that's the kind of player he is. He kind of seems to build some. I mean, we were talking about him being one of the top three players in the world in March. And now, you know, it's almost an afterthought. But not if he comes out and plays well at the U.S. Open. So, you know, those are two. And Kevin Kisner, the defending champion, with your horse, Dwayne Bach. You know, there's a guy that's looking to take it to the next level. So, you know, we've got some guys that looks trending the right way towards Pebble, and some guys maybe that we're unsure about, are they going to be ready that week? And a lot of those guys, Bob, are playing this week at Memorial to try and get themselves ready for the U.S. Open.
Yeah, and the good thing about Memorial, I mean, Jack does, and when I say Jack, I should say Mr. Nicklaus, because that's how much I think of him. You know, that golf course is going to be very challenging. I think it's going to be good preparation for any event you play. And something special is happening this week, Jay, and I want to get your comment on it. One of the great, something I want to get your opinion on, Jay, one of the great people in golf, Judy Rankin, is the Memorial Tournament honoree this year. I mean, anybody that's ever met Judy is a friend of Judy's. She's simply just an outstanding person.
Bob, she was honored last year by the Missouri State Hall of Fame. She was born and raised here in St. Louis, went by Judy Trelumpke when she graced the cover of Sports Illustrated, I think at 13 or 14. And her and my dad have had a tremendous relationship, and I got to sit at the table with her that night that she went into the Missouri Sports Hall of Fame. And I, you know, people nowadays know her as a broadcaster, but she was a hell of a player. And I mean, a hell of a player as a young girl. I mean, before there was Laura Baugh, there was Judy Trelumpke or Judy Rankin. And she is a grand lady. She can sit around and talk smack with the boys. She was an innovator on television broadcasts and a fixture at ABC, and a grand lady to be honored this week by Jack and Barbara Nicklaus. A special gal, no question about it.
Very well said. We're going to talk more about the Memorial Tournament. That'll be coming up, but I think you're going to take us to break, Jay.
Yeah, we will do that, Bob. We're going to talk about Jack's place and Jack's tournament after this short break. You're listening to In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay. Heard on KTRS, the Big 550 in St. Louis, the Armed Forces Radio Network, iTunes, Audio Boom, Spreaker, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or just ask your smart speaker Alexa, and you'll be connected.
Situated in central St. Louis resides the oldest public golf course west of the Mississippi, Normandy Golf Club. Opened in 1901 and designed by the renowned Fowlis Brothers of Scotland, this old gem has played host to Babe Ruth, Mickey Rooney, and the great Babe Zaharias. History lives and breathes at The Rock, as Normandy is affectionately known. A mixture of long and short holes in a tree-lined atmosphere challenge golfers of all skill levels. The 18th hole at Normandy, well, it's as tough a par 3 as you'll find, measuring 251 yards from the back tee. In 2015, a renewed commitment was made to this unique property under the direction of Walters Golf Management. Affordable rates and top-notch service is what you'll find at Normandy Golf Club. If your travels bring you to St. Louis, make sure to make a tee time at The Rock. To learn more, check out normandygolf.com or call 314-862-4884 and enjoy old-school golf at its finest.
Welcome back to In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay. Of course, you can find Bob on Twitter at Bob Bubka, V-O-G. That V-O-G, don't you dare forget, is the voice of golf, as it should be. I'm there, STL Golf Geek on Twitter. And if you're ever in St. Louis, come see me at what we call The Rock, the oldest public golf course west of the Mississippi, Normandy Golf Club. Well, it's not quite the Memorial. The only thing we've got in common with Muirfield is we got 18 sticks in the ground just like them. It is a special place, Bob. You know, Jack kind of created Muirfield with a lot of Masters features, a couple of those interesting par threes, the fast greens. It's a unique property. I still kick myself every day. 1986, missed about a five-footer that would have got me in a playoff to play in the U.S. Junior at Muirfield. But it's a great course. Jack puts on a wonderful show and the best in the world turnout.
Well, I certainly hope you're not like Doug Sanders, who missed that putt at St. Andrews, I think, 1970, that would have gotten him the claret jug.
Yep.
And I said, Doug, you ever think about that putt you missed? He said, heck no, Bob. Sometimes 5 minutes goes by without me thinking about it. I hope that's not the same for you, Jay.
No, and he went to those crazy shoes to keep his mind off of it. I haven't gotten that bad for me. It would have been great to play there, but, you know, we talked about the wonderful Judy Rankin being the memorial honoree. It's also nice to see you're tied in with a lot of the folks over the pond in Europe and the BBC and Sky Sport and different stuff. Peter Allis, in his sixth decade of broadcasting since his BBC debut in 1961, he's also going to be honored. That's cool. And the fact that the two of them work together at ABC also is nice, I'm sure, for both of them.
Yeah, certainly congratulations to Rankin and Alice. And somehow I have this feeling deep in my heart that one Jay Randolph Sr. One day certainly deserving of being honored at the Memorial Tournament. Good field there this week. A lot of players playing. You know, when you say good field, the first question that pops up is Tiger in the field? Well, the answer is yes. What are you going to expect from Mr. Woods this week?
I mean, what do you expect? I mean, this is what Wells Fargo would have been, if you will, in between the Masters and the PGA. So here we're going to get a sense, or at least we think we're going to get a sense of where he's at. I mean, he's won the Sucker five times. He's playing with Justin Rose and Bryson DeChambeau. And if you don't know it, he and Bryson are tight. They play a lot of practice rounds. I mean, it's a perfect pairing for him. You'd think he'd play pretty well. I mean, he's looking to tie Snead's record for the most PGA Tour wins. How cool would it be if he did that and the hand of Jack Nicklaus shook the hand of Tiger Woods on his 82nd victory? Well, it's easy to write those stories. He's got to go out and do it. He was able to do it at Augusta. The question becomes, is he going to be able to do it again and again? And then it becomes when and when. And I don't know. I think we got a lot to look forward to this week. You got Mickelson. We talked about Ricky Fowler missing the cut last week. And Matt Kuchar. And Kuchar, all he does is just finish in the top 10 or top 5 every week. And then you got Rory, Spieth, and Justin Thomas. Now, this will be Thomas's first time to play since the Masters with a wrist injury. So, you know, we got a couple of questions about Rory. The questions never seemed to leave us about Spieth, and now JT. That's an interesting pairing.
Yeah, it really is. But I go back to that one you mentioned first. You know, Tiger Woods, Justin Rose, Bryson DeChambeau. At the end of 36 holes on Friday, if somebody told me I have to pick who is going to be the low score of that threesome, I'd be really I don't know. I'd probably put all three names up on a board and take a dart and see where that dart ended up. A lot of questions around all three of those players.
Yeah, and that's what's so interesting now. You know, it seemed like just about everybody and their brother was playing decent going into Augusta. And then we had such a short time until the PGA, and really you got the only feel you could get was at the Wells Fargo, and how much did that give you? This almost feels like the week to find out what we're getting ready for at Augusta. I mean, without the Dustin Johnsons and the Brooks Koepkas, that, you know, obviously, you know, if they play well, they're going to be right there. But, you know, I told you earlier, I mean, could you imagine if the golf gods really did this to us and had Tiger win at Augusta, Koepka win the PGA back-to-back, being the last to win it in August, the first to win it in May, somehow find a way for Phil Mickelson to get the Grand Slam at Pebble Beach, and then Rory McIlroy win the British Open at Port Rush in Northern Ireland. I mean, but, you know, we've made it halfway there, Bob.
Well, I have to throttle back the enthusiasm for Phil Mickelson at the U.S. Open. I mean, six times this guy's finished second. Six times in the U.S. Open. He knows what a U.S. Open title will mean. He'll become the sixth man in history to have won all four majors. I mean, he's knocked on that door so many times. He's got to feel like a kid that goes out at Halloween and trick-or-treating and he can't find anybody home. I mean, it's amazing that Phil has been able to come that close but just can't get over the line. Now, he has a good relationship with Pebble Beach, so it's not a big stretch. I think he just needs some early momentum and then maybe get sucked into that vacuum of, wow, this time it's really going to happen, and he can cross that line on Sunday. What a story in golf that would be.
Well, what would be amazing is that his first professional golf tournament he ever played in was the 92 U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. I think he shot 69, 80 and missed the cut. But that was his first professional event as a professional. He'd obviously won a tournament, as an amateur. Just when you'd count out Phil, would be the time that he'd make some sort of move. So that's a fun pairing to watch this week with those three. Also, three international stars, Hideki Matsuyama, who's shown some life as of late. Jason Day, when healthy, he's got five top tens coming in. He basically calls Columbus, Ohio home now. And then you got Adam Scott. So, you know, this ought to be, while you don't have Koepka and DJ and maybe a handful of other guys, this is pretty strong stuff. I think, you and I are going to talk about this next week. And I guarantee you that we're going to talk about one or two guys that have shown us that they're ready for the U.S. Open.
Yeah, absolutely. And Adam Scott, it really comes down to his ball striking right now is maybe as good as it's ever been. It's just that battle with the short stick. If he gets that rolling, Adam Scott could win at Pebble Beach. They certainly could win at Pebble Beach. And quite frankly, I'm surprised that Matsuyama has not won a major by now.
Well, and his inconsistency has been what has really bothered him and bothered his fans. He shows signs that he's getting more consistent, but yet then falters off a little bit. These are three guys that are going to be a main cog in the President's Cup team. I got to believe, even though Adam Scott may be a little bit outside right now, he's 11th. Jason Day's 7th. Matsuyama, despite not winning a major, is 3rd in those rankings. But, yeah, I mean, you know, that's where Matsuyama is. We know how good he is. We know he can win XYZ PGA Tour event. The question becomes, in the next couple of years, is he going to take it to the next level and find a way to win his major? And as I said, we've heightened these majors, Bob, even more than they were before. And as you always like to point out to people, there are only four of them. I mean, you know, you play 10 years, that's only 40 chances. And this is a hard game. I don't play chess, but this is the hardest game I've found.
Well, there's no doubt about that. And I think it's going to be hard for Justin Thomas this week, Jay. Wrist injury when you play the sport of golf. I mean, it's a scary prospect. I'm sure Justin has taken probably a little bit extra time. He'd rather take more time than rush back too soon. And, you know, he wants to get back in those conversations of being able to, you know, win more majors. He's got that PGA, but he certainly would love a U.S. Open. And when I look at Pebble Beach and I look at a healthy Justin Thomas, I see a nice marriage possibly there.
I don't think there's any doubt about it. You know, I mean, again, a guy that we were pointing to as one of these next, you know, group of players that were going to be the elite crew. And, you know, if you followed it the last couple years, we've had different guys. Now Koepka has kind of taken the mantle with his four majors. Granted, Rory's got four, but the way in which Koepka arrived at his four, I think, is what fuels the people that would put him at the top of the list of the best players in the post-Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson era. So all these guys, I mean, these next 3 to 5 years for these younger players, or I say younger players, the guys that are 25 to 35, I mean, this is, you know, this is where they can make their careers. This is where they can put themselves in record books. And you know, Brooks Koepka has done that. When you win 4 of 8 majors and you win back-to-back Opens, back-to-back PGAs, you jump to a different level. And he's moved past Jordan and Dustin and Ricky and Rory and Justin and all these guys. He's ahead of them. And, you know, now we wait and see what he's going to show us at the U.S. Open.
Well, I'm going to end this week by saying one thing. Saying that somebody's won 4 of the last 8 majors they played in is absolutely incredible. But as incredible as that is, if you can say 5 of 9, that's a whole new ball game.
Yeah, that's another level. When we come back, we'll have our feature interview with Alyssa Gaudet, the founder and leader of the annual Women's Golf Day to be held on June 4th, a day dedicated to engaging, empowering, and supporting women through golf, created for women so they can enjoy and learn the skills that last a lifetime. And Alyssa will tell us all about it when we return.
Situated in central St. Louis resides the oldest public golf course west of the Mississippi, Normandy Golf Club. Opened in 1901 and designed by the renowned Fowlis Brothers of Scotland, this old gem has played host to Babe Ruth, Mickey Rooney, and the great Babe Zaharias. History lives and breathes at the Rock, as Normandy is affectionately known. A mixture of long and short holes in a tree-lined atmosphere challenge golfers of all skill levels. The 18th hole at Normandy, well, it's as tough a par 3 as you'll find, measuring 251 yards from the back tee. In 2015, a renewed commitment was made to this unique property under the direction of Walters Golf Management. Affordable rates and top-notch service is what you'll find at Normandy Golf Club. If your travels bring you to St. Louis, make sure to make a tee time at The Rock. To learn more, check out normandygolf.com or call 314-862-4884 and enjoy old-school golf at its finest.
Big day in the world of golf coming up very shortly, and it has been my experience whenever there's a worthwhile endeavor, if you drill down far enough, you'll discover the driving force, and that's exactly what our next guest is. Her name is Alyssa Gaudet. She is the driving force behind Women's Golf Day, and Alyssa, we've been friends for a long time, and I've always admired whatever initiative you were working on. But this one, I really think you've hit a home run, and you're providing something that, you know, the world of golf really needs. We need more women playing golf, not even for golf, but for the benefit of the women that get an opportunity to do that. Thanks for joining me. I know you're excited. Next week is the big day.
Yes. Thank you, Bob, for having me on. And it's Women's Golf Day, June 4th, Tuesday, June 4th. This will be the 4th year that we're doing it. And it's been quite the adventure. We're really, we've had a lot of positive feedback. I think one of the interesting things is it's, you know, it's something that was kind of came out of the private sector as opposed to originally, the original origin is not from a governing body. However, they have all gotten on board. So that's been, you know, really nice. We know that the golf industry is a little more challenging because, you know, it's fragmented, and that's what we saw. So we felt that like women didn't really know where to start or how to get involved. But so we created this one day, 4 hours. The suggested format is that the first 2 hours, women either take 2 hours of lessons or play 9 holes. And then there's a hard stop and there's 2 hours of socializing. And we allow the clubs to have the event be public or private, and they can charge a fee or not charge a fee. It's their own kind of micro business for the day, and also doesn't compromise whether it's a private club or a Muni or, you know, a Top Golf to PGA Tour Superstore. We have everybody involved. The management companies have all gotten behind it. So it's been a phenomenal, phenomenal thing. And we've just watched it grow. And I can say that we have very proudly, as of today, 831 locations in 46 countries, all participating on the same day.
I mean, that's just amazing numbers, Alyssa. I have to go back to the beginning, though. What gave you the idea? What gave you the motivation that you could pull something of this magnitude off?
Right. And as you alluded to, we've known each other for a while. So I've been in the industry for a while. And like I said, we saw, you know, I saw there was this fragmentation, had this idea. We tested it in a golf course outside of Boston, and it was successful. And so we put it out there to the management companies and, you know, leveraged a lot of my contacts over the years. So with the International Golf Federations, we've got the World Golf Foundation, We Are Golf, European Tour, PGA Tour, all of them. And, you know, they tried it, but in all reality, it's the marketplace that spoke. You know, I think that's a differentiating point between this and some programming is, you know, women came out, women were interested, and they, from social media, we had 15 million impressions last year to women actually coming out. And almost every one of the events, what we hear is that if they did it the first year, you know, they had a significant increase year after year of people participating. So, you know, we didn't go out thinking that we're going to have this big worldwide event. It kind of just, you know, it happened. We allow any location that wants to sign up. I think 35 courses in the Czech Republic. We have 9 in Nigeria. We have, I think, 6 Muslim countries participating this year. 1 is delayed, you know, because it's happening during Ramadan. So it's a pretty interesting how the thing has unfolded. And we just, you know, we put it out there. We gave everybody the same opportunity and the locations. It gives them an opportunity to highlight their location, have a profile, have women from around the world find them, and then, you know, as well, give women an opportunity to find something that's convenient for them.
You know, it's amazing. Over the years of being in the golf business, I hear quite often ladies saying that, you know, they sometimes think about playing golf, but they don't know how to take that first step. And I think your program makes it rather simple for females to take that first step. What does a lady listening to this show right now have to do in order to get involved on June 4th?
I highly encourage not just women, but men to also share the information with the women in their lives. That could be a daughter, a mother, sister, coworker. It's really important that we engage the men as well to invite and encourage women to get out and play. But the easiest thing is to go to womensgolfday.com, womensgolfday.com, and you can find a location, register to play. There's a button, and it'll bring up an interactive map. You can look at the map, or you can type in a location, and it will show you what's available. And, you know, we really went out of our way to not just have the golf courses and a lot of, like I said, the management companies, whether it's the Troons and Club Corps and Billy Caspers of the world, but also PGA Tour Superstore and Top Golf. So if you're intimidated by going to a golf course, I mean, it's really simple to go into a PGA Tour Superstore. They're going to have putting, they're going to have driving, they're going to have basics, they're going to have refreshments and socializing. So it does make it a really simple play for somebody. And from there, you know, what we've afforded all these locations is the opportunity for them to then say, hey, these are all the programs that we have. These are all the continuing ways you can continue. Because there are so many really wonderful programs out there. You know, we didn't need to reinvent a program. We're trying to eliminate the fragmentation.
Let me ask you, is there a cost involved?
Originally, when at the beginning of the year to drive everybody to get on board, it was we offer it for free until the end of February. And then there is a $79 cost for the location to register. As far as the consumer goes, it depends. They go and they find their location. The locations decide if it's, once again, public or private, and if there's a fee or no fee.
Well, it certainly sounds exciting, and it seems like you covered a lot of the bases. What I'd like to do in our time remaining here is just take an individual through what's going to happen once they show up. What are they going to be educated about? What are they going to be allowed to do? What's the main takeaway when they walk away?
That would vary, but it's the main point is to get them together and to encourage them to continue on. So hopefully they'll get, you know, depending on the location, they'll get instruction that day or play the nine holes. The thing that we've noticed is the camaraderie and the comfortability of having existing golfers mingle with new golfers also is a game changer to allow them to understand a little bit better, and maybe that's over a cocktail or afterwards when they're socializing, and it takes away a lot of the intimidation factor. And I think also just having somebody that they could perhaps go out and go try to play with or engage with in lessons and what have you. And we can encourage everybody to use the hashtag Women's Golf Day, even men, and just celebrate the women in their lives that are golfing and to get more women into golf.
Well, now you're up to date on what's going on around the world of golf. That's it for this week.
So on behalf of our executive producer, Janice Self, Jay Randolph Jr., and myself, Bob Bupka, a big thank you for being part of our Grill Room family. Please follow us on Twitter at TGRGolf. Of course, you can like us and follow us on Facebook and on Instagram at The Grill Room Golf Show.
Thanks for spending some time in the Grill Room. No need to leave a tip. Just come back again next week. The Grill Room.